Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It's Monday, April 27th, and you're listening to Waypoint Radio's Final Fantasy VII Remake special spoiler cast. I'm your host, Austin Walker. Joining me today, Kato, as always. How are you doing, Kato?
Hi. I'm awake, in a sense.
Okay. Wow. Great. Well, just pure energy to start the podcast.
Also joining us again for the first time after taking some parental leave.
What is time?
Patrick Klepek is here. Yo, listen, we're going to be asking about what time is in a moment as we get into Final Fantasy VII.
Fair.
Welcome back, Patrick.
I feel like I wake up every day and I hold my head just like Cloud and I'm like, Tuesday, Friday, can I go to the Target today? No, wait till Monday when people aren't there.
The whispers of fate are protecting the Target. You're not
The library is closed, and so if I go to Target and purchase books and return them in 30 days in mint condition, is that fraud? Is that fraud in these extraordinary circumstances?
We're not going down this road. Also joining us, yes, the voice of Matthew Gault, joining us again to talk about Final Fantasy VII. Hello.
Hello, sir.
Hi, are you doing any COVID-19 fraud?
It's very light.
I didn't
light.
Buy the books. I just thought about it, and I floated the idea to some people in my neighborhood when they come by. I'm just tired of the Frozen Find It book. Look, I don't give a shit about Elsa's frozen couch anymore. I need to find...
Wait. Austin brought up something important. You're talking to people in your neighborhood? That doesn't sound like social distancing to me.
Hey, you go in your driveway, and then you're playing with the water, and people go on the sidewalk. You know, you've got... my daughter did break social distancing with our neighbors. She's been very good, very listening. She, heartbreakingly, she likes to play the wish game where she throws a coin or a rock into the water, and she asked recently, it's like, that I hope people would stop being sick. And I was like, oh. Thank you, Jessica. That's a good wish. Oh. But she gets excited in the spring when, as she calls them, dandewiles, but dandelions, you know, the little yellow flowers.
Dandewiles is good.
Dandewiles is good. It feels like a Final Fantasy ass name. Like, and you pluck a hair or a feather off a chocobo, and that's a dandewile.
Yes.
She likes to pick flowers, and I'm like, well, you can pick those because they're pretty, but people don't. It's a weed, and people don't usually like that in their yard. So you can go and pick all the dandewiles you want. And these two neighbors walked by, and she's like, can I give them a dandewile? I was like, you're not. Don't think you're supposed to. And then they like signaled to me, they're like, we'll just wash our hands. Your daughter can give us a flower. And I was like, okay, all right, well,
okay.
She means well.
So yeah, we're here to dig deep into the Final Fantasy VII remake, which at this point I think all of us have completed.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I'm glad. I know it was
Kato, you must have had to marathon it because I was when Austin warned me, he's like, no, there's more than you think. When the game gives the traditional, hey, you're at the end game. I was like, oh, cool. So I've probably got 4 or 5 hours left. And Austin was like, double. And that's probably, it was closer to 10.
It was closer to 10. Yeah, definitely. That last stretch is pretty long. I'm glad, Kato, that you also wrapped it up. I'm curious, I guess, Galt and I kind of have you'd already beaten it when we did our first podcast, Galt. I beat it shortly thereafter. I have weighed in here and on Abnormal Mapping and some other places. So just for Kato and Patrick, what was the general takeaway? Do you like it? Let's just like get a base level.
I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was a great way to tweak. If you're going to remake a story that everyone knows so well, let's make some changes. Let's get a little wild. And they did. And I think it's it sets up. Let's get really wild.
Yeah, we'll dig into it. We will.
Yeah, and it sets up. like I think you said somewhere that it sets up a franchise, right? This is about more than just creating a trilogy, possibly.
This feels like they want like to really invest in this new world. We'll see. We'll see. Mm-hmm. Tato and Patrick, though, I'm curious.
Dirge of Cerberus reboot.
Oh, my God. Two, yeah. Re-Dirge of Cerberus.
Although, I believe person who did the tremendous soundtrack for the remake also did. People have been pointing out, yo, this person's been making hot beats for a long time. And I believe they did the Dirge of Cerberus soundtrack. So I've been meaning to go back to the rest of the work of that.
I loved the
remake. I am so curious how it hits people who haven't played Final Fantasy VII. It does not feel as though it was written for those people. Not that it's not enjoyable, but I think it is absolutely something that is meant to be a work that is commenting on a past work and doesn't necessarily, like, I don't remember so much of, like, to the point that the Dementors is like, well, that could have been in the original game and I just forgot. clearly not. But I do think it, like, it is written presupposing you have at least some nostalgic framework for Seven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it actually, we've talked on this podcast before about how, tropes of game design, of storytelling, of putting in like voice memos and like notes you come across, like, are a really tired way of doing world building. But boy, this game could have actually used a ton of that, where it's like, if they wanted to tell this story this way, I would have loved, like, you come across a desk and here's a note that explains like the motivations of Shinra or like a little bit more of the world that I think you got a lot more of in Final Fantasy VII, which had a lot more dialogue, right? Like, you had a lot more of like talking to people in a way that doesn't happen in this one. So
I feel like what you get in, I think that a lot of the stuff that actually comes out of Final Fantasy VII, the original, is just the game keeps going from here and you end up getting more later.
True. I guess maybe I'm informing my entire perspective of Seven, but like, given that this is meant to be, yes, it's episodic or part of, you know, it'll be a sequel to this, however you want to frame it. I do think it's got to be a challenge for newcomers to fully understand what's going on. Or I wonder if the way things escalate in this remake, well, Kaito can probably speak to this.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm curious about.
I'll toss to you after this last point, is that the way it escalates, I wonder if that comes across as like weirdly and absurdly bombastic for the notion that this is a story that is supposed to continue for a long time to go, relative to folks who have played Final Fantasy VII, and the way it twists and turns the narrative is part of the fun of the way this kind of wraps up. But Kaito, I guess I'm curious how it landed with you overall.
You know, so I guess I could be called a Kingdom Hearts fan. So there's a little bit of that ending part that was...
It is fully... I think the tweet I wrote was like, there's something along the lines of like, there's a disturbing amount of Kingdom Hearts in the ending to Final Fantasy VII, and I find it upsetting how much it actually works. Like, my takeaway for Final Fantasy VII Remake, Kaito, was, hey, the script writer for this, because Nomura gets the chief creative credit, but he was not the hard to figure out exact delineage of like who did what work necessarily in a big productions like this, but there's a different like screenwriter credit, and I found the writing in this really strong in a way that I was like, give that person, make them work with Nomura on Kingdom Hearts. The people people spoke like humans in this game at times.
It was a very Kingdom Hearts-esque framing for things, but they spoke well in their in the cutscenes, and it didn't sound weird because the pacing was off.
Yeah, there wasn't like a huge delay between.
Yeah, between like every single sentence.
Well, not even sentences, phrases.
Yeah,
they even do. This is like a very much for Japanese RPGs, but there's still a lot of like. Nod. Nod. Yeah. And that's here, but in Kingdom Hearts, it's like nod. 5 second pause, like nod. 5 second pause, and then here it like fits, or at least it doesn't. It's not disruptive to the pacing of the storytelling.
It flows more. I have a lot of questions. The thing is that it feels. Here's the thing: it does feel like, though, is that it feels coherent. Even though I don't know what the fuck is happening half the time, and I'm like asking questions, but I'm asking questions that feel like, okay, I get that this will probably be answered later on, or if not, this is something that we're getting rid of, given the that whole last section, which we can when we get there.
Yeah, but the whole bits was Zach. Please try to explain that to me, Kato.
Is that one of the ones like, who the fuck is this soldier? Is this like black haired soldier?
What the fuck is this meteor?
Oh, sure.
Fair. Oh, yeah.
Fair.
It's on the cover art of the original.
I get, yes. It's even, it's on the menu, the start menu of this one. So I get that it's important. I don't know
what. Here's a question. It's in the key. It's in the logo.
And it's not meant, it's,
no. Wow.
Yeah, huh. What? Well, because that hasn't happened yet. That's
right.
The thing.
Right. I got that as much.
The threat of it hasn't even occurred yet.
Right.
There's a moment in Final Fantasy VII where, Meteor becomes the overarching plot at that point. That hasn't happened yet because we haven't gotten anywhere near where that happens. I mean, likewise, did you. Okay, so there's that sequence towards the end of the game where they show you four clips. They show you Meteor hitting Shidra or hitting Midgar. Uh-huh. They show you something that is like green and a piece of materia falling. Did you know what that was?
I guessed because there were some clasped hands that looked familiar.
Uh-huh.
That I've seen praying a lot during, and I know that spoiler. Because everyone fucking knows that spoiler. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Okay, so that you.
Oh, wait, have you mentioned? We're going to spoil everything. We have to spoil everything
about this game, probably about Final Fantasy VII. We need to be open enough to answer questions around stuff if that comes up. And frankly, I think that this game has told us, hey, go learn everything you can about Final Fantasy VII.
Uh-huh.
Part of the joy will be seeing it subverted in this game and in future games.
Yeah, right? I would almost recommend that you go play. Or if I had more time, I would go play Final Fantasy VII.
Absolutely.
And then
I want to do that now. I was like, wait.
Because I don't think. Oh, go ahead.
I have a question, Kato. Did you feel like the first game had a good arc all into itself? Like the learning about Shinra and kind of climbing that tower and telling those stories and defeating them in that way? Do you feel like that was all self-contained aside from what comes after the highway scene?
Right after the. Yeah, I do think that. All of that seemed like well-paced and like made sense even without the context of the, which here's the thing. I do have the context for that part of it, which is weird. Just not anything past it because I played the original through Midgar and that was it. But even then though, like just like talking about like pacing and like how much information you get, I feel like there was so much new characterization that, like, I think it came out better. Like, there was more. It felt like, because I replayed that first Midgar section right before this came out, and there's very little in Midgar about.
It's only 2 or 3 hours, right?
It was like short. 7, but
okay.
There's a lot more walking around and not talking to people than you like the quote unquote cut scenes are more sparse than you would imagine doing that whole like bit in 7 hours. It definitely feel like that was like the main thing that it feels like they were trying to do is like make that specific section of the story more impactful. Cause when I played through, it was like, it moved at a clip where I was like, not super, invested in like understanding like what exactly was going on with Shinra in the original. It's like you kind of got a sense of it. It's like, yeah, they're bad. They're just don't worry too much about it. The planet's dying, yada yada yada. But there was just not the space, right? Because they had however many hours after Midgar to like put on that disc, those two discs.
The original?
Yeah.
Was it four discs? All said.
It was three.
Three?
Okay. Yes. Okay.
The PC is four. I have it over here on my shelf, actually, which is.
But yeah, the PlayStation 1 was three.
It was three. Okay. Yeah.
So, like, you kind of understand where that happens, and they probably put all of that stuff later on. But here, it definitely felt like I learned more than I did playing the original.
I mean, there was, just to be 100% clear, there was a lot of fundamentally totally new stuff in this game that. They never, like, the original game doesn't ever do the thing about, like, someone like Jesse's dad who works for Shinra and gets sick working, you know, with the Mako reactor.
Right.
And then it's now kind of been, like, left to fucking suffer and die, right?
Right.
That stuff is completely new and does help build out Shinra as an antagonistic faction. The original, you know, does return to questions about whether at what Avalanche was doing, blah, blah, blah. But like Barrett gets a lot of good stuff in this game in which he can really underscore what his political philosophy is in a way that just like did not exist in the original, which makes me very curious
like
about
at
how.
All?
You know, there's like a line here or there. There's a lot of, but like stuff like the elevator speech, if you've seen that, where he basically says like the first step towards, you can't be a good person if you ignore that you're complicit with, you know, the violence and oppression of the system that you're part of.
It would be hard. Like there was ideological through lines of Final Fantasy VII, but it would hard to like really pin it down. Right. And like one of the things that the remake does is like, you know, stake out much more clearly, like, you know, Tifa's, you know, reluctance and like Barrett's right. aggressiveness. And, you know, there are threads that it pulls on that in the subsequent, you know, discs of Final Fantasy VII that I'll be curious how they choose to or not tackle that stuff going forward. Sorry,
at what point in the original do they explain Barrett's backstory? Do you remember
later? Yeah, when you get to Golden Saucer, you get thrown out of Golden Saucer. You meet Dine. You do the whole stuff with Dine.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing yet. There's none of the like, what's up with Marlene? There's none of the all that stuff comes after this game, and they're clearly saving that for that.
And they've set it up. I noticed a couple moments where they kind of foreshadow it.
Yes. Yeah. There are definitely some things like that. I mean, I think that they do that. They do that with a lot of stuff, just not all the stuff that I kind of wished they did. If I have one complaint, it's that like Kato, without thinking about stuff you've read online, who is Sephiroth?
Evil sword, big sword.
Sephiroth's relationship with Cloud, besides like homoerotic horniness.
Yeah, I was gonna say they horny. I think they horny. I think there was something about Soldier mentioned at one point, but I could not actually. I would not bet money on it. I could have sworn there was like Sephiroth a single completely. Line.
Me too. I think that. Well, I think that the stuff that is there works for me in the sense that. I think that for me, as someone who knows who Sephiroth is, that stuff was like, holy shit, he showed up, and that's pretty effective. But they completely leave a void for new players as to like who this person is, why Cloud or Tifa have any relationship to him, or what the fear is of him. And the thing that's frustrating is the next scene in this game, the next scene in Final Fantasy VII, is that everyone goes to an inn in a different town, and Cloud is like, all right, let me catch you up about Sephiroth. Let me tell you who that motherfucker is. And I mean, it's such a different situation, though, because in the original, that works. And in the original, you could have even, if it kept the pure structure of the original, and this is not me advocating for that necessarily, but it would have worked because Sephiroth only shows up for the first time after President Shinra's dead. You find President Shinra with the fucking sword in his back. Sephiroth shows up, is intimidating, leaves, you break off, and everyone is like, holy shit, what the fuck is that guy? Was he on our side? He killed President Shinra. That must mean he's good. And then Cloud has to be like, all right, pause. Let me and Tifa tell you about the time that Sephiroth came to our hometown, including with me as one of his co-soldiers, and how bad it went. And my suspicion is that's where the next game begins. If I had to like put money on it, I think you start the next game with that flashback, and you play as Sephiroth at least you play as Sephiroth. Maybe you play all the way as like Cloud, Zack, and Sephiroth. But at least you get the Sephiroth flashback. And play all that stuff out. But I would have loved a little bit more of that. Just even Cloud saying, yeah, Sephiroth and I used to work together and da 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 would have helped so much. Patrick, why do you think that they botched him?
Because they've made the comparison of how they handled Sephiroth in the original to Jaws, and I think they tried to make that more explicit here. But I just, like, it doesn't even work for me as someone familiar with the original story and Sephiroth and where the plot and character motivations eventually go. It just felt like, right, Sephiroth is very iconic. Gotta get that boy in here early, because what is FF7 without Sephiroth? And given where they knew where they were ending the story, like purely there just wasn't that much room to insert Sephiroth. And so it just felt like, we're not going to get to him for another 5 years. Like, got to get him in here somewhere. And I think his sudden appearance in the original is part of his power because it comes out of nowhere. And I think it would have been just as effective this time around to have him show up. You know, maybe they find a different way to handle it or whatever. But I got very tired of the like Cloud holding his head and getting flashbacks to things. Sephiroth showing up and being like, like, okay, buddy, like, great.
Wow, that's a really good, yeah.
It kind of felt like it. I was like, you're not very intimidating, dude. Like, you know, just.
Disagree. I liked it.
Good. I think the thing is that they use it, right? Like, the thing is that he is constantly trying to fuck up the timeline. He is, like, there to try to shove things off course and try to get into Cloud's head and make him do different things. Obviously, one of the big mysteries is, like, what is the mechanism for that there? How much does Sephiroth know? Is this a Sephiroth from a different timeline? Is this a Sephiroth at all, or is this another projection?
Doesn't Advent Children suppose that he is like his spirit like lives forever, and thus he can will himself into the world forever?
It does the same thing with Aerith. Yes, that is absolutely true, and it also assumes that Aerith can do that, but decided not to. I was like, no, this is good actually.
I guess part of my issue with the Sephiroth stuff is also connected, as much as I like the narrative framework they took and made and what they make explicit by the end of how they're going to handle the narrative remixing, or like making this in some ways a sequel instead of just a straight remake, is that it's like a very Nomura thing to have that visualized constantly by these Dementors that are going around. And so like that stuff really stopped working for me at a certain point. Like, I love the explanation, and like we can get to there and talking about like how they achieve what their goal is for the future of this. But I didn't need to see it constantly. Like, it was the lack of subtlety, I think, is connected to my issue with Sephiroth. Was like, cool, I get it. When something important is happening, these weird creatures show up over and over again, to the point that I found it exceedingly silly, even if I fully buy into the narrative explanation that they, and it makes me excited about the future of where they're going with it. I found like the actual mechanism of displaying that to be tiresome to a certain point.
Can we talk about those Whispers of Fate a little bit?
Yeah.
So, Austin, you had said something to me. It was exactly the read that I had on them, too. And Patrick, you saying that they're kind of unsubtle, I think, really plays into this. My sense is I was seeing... So, in the game, for the people that haven't played it, these spirits show up at any point that the player would diverge from the original Final Fantasy VII canonical timeline, and they prevent it from happening.
And if Cloud is going to not take the second job, they literally cause a ruckus so that he has to be in the right place. Someone gets hurt and he has to go on that job, for instance.
And at the end of the game, they kill Wedge seemingly because that's when he's supposed to die.
Well, he had died already in the original at that point. He dies when the plate drops in the original. Falls off that tower.
So they're just kind of spitefully finishing him off because he's already supposed to be dead.
Yes. Right. Meanwhile, they're happy to bring Barret back to life, which...
Well, because Barret doesn't die there.
He doesn't die there.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yes.
My read on...
question marks on Jesse, on Biggs, like...
Right.
Who knows why? Like, yeah.
Yeah. But my read on them was that it's on a certain level, these are the representations of like angry fans, like projected into the world.
Old head purists. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Old head purists, like making sure that the remake is proceeding as planned. At a certain point, I kind of had that read in my brain, and then I couldn't let it go throughout the rest of the game. So, watching them. And I enjoyed that. I enjoy sticking the eye in the old head purists, or putting a stick in the eye of the old head purists.
I think that's one. I definitely think that was one read. That was the first read I had too. You and I were linked up on that. And then after like sitting with it for a little while, I ended up having a second read. And I think both of these are you know, I don't think there's any evidence that one is more true than the other. There's also a read that is the Whispers are the original, are the creators of the original, including the people who've now made this game. And the party are the fans who transform a work with fan fiction, with their decision to like create their own AUs, with crossovers, with like, oh, but wouldn't it be cool if Aerith and Tifa were like BFFs all the time? And we're, let's add that to the frame. I wish Zack had lived. I would love to see a world where Zack lived. Fans do that just as much as they do the purest thing. And I think that tension is probably like the most, the real accurate read here is like whether you're on the creative side or the fan side, you can be on both sides of that particular thing, whether or not you want the work to remain untouched and pure, or whether you are really invested in that sort of transformative sense of creative work. And I love that is what they made the game to be about in a way that's
it's also like really a unique, direct. When remakes and reboots happen, the original creators are rarely involved. Mm-hmm. Like when this happens most commonly in film, right? This does happen in games, but like, you know, remakes and reboots are really prevalent in film, and often is the case where, like, you know, they make a new Halloween and John Carpenter is a producer, right? Where it's just you write a check and they get to go make it and say they've had the original, you know, or they have George Lucas come to the set of, you know, the
there's
the
like
Force
two
Awakens.
Conversations. They look at some art or whatever. They go, oh, yeah, cool. It's a good idea.
But you know, but
I'm
then you hear
to see how it goes.
But then Bob Iger writes a story where he's like, yeah, we kind of told Lucas to fuck off and we just kind of did our own thing because he wanted like us to go inside bodies with midichlorians. Like,
listen, the wills are not to be trifled with.
And so Final Fantasy VII was in such a unique situation, which obviously there are newcomers who are working on the game purely by the scope of production in 2020, but the having Nomura, who was a chief creative, you know, Katase, like there are people who are foundational to Final Fantasy VII's like core elements are now executive level like folks that were very hands on in Final Fantasy VII, and so I often took it as like, when I've seen presentations from Katase and stuff like that in the past, it's like, well, if you're gonna come back, like, why not? Like, what would be the point of returning to just do a high fidelity? Like, and that's what Square's done in the past, right? Like, what's always been interesting about the evolution of video games is Square and Final Fantasy have been at the heart of technological advancement, improving, like, oh, this is how far we've come. Like, when the PS2 was first unveiled, one of the things they did was do the Squall and Rinoa ballroom dance sequence in real time, which had been a CG scene in PS1. When they showed off the PS3 for the first time, back when people thought they were going to remake Final Fantasy VII for the first time, because they did the opening Midgar sequence, not with, I don't know if it was with Cloud or not, but it's definitely like the pullout to the entirety of Midgar in real time on the PS3. And then they didn't do anything for 10 years there. And so, it's been curious to see how Square and Final Fantasy has been, and the evolution of video game like graphics technology has been linked at the hip of like reproducing what we did in the past, but like at a higher fidelity. And that could have been what they did with Final Fantasy VII, but instead they chose to not just expand like the storytelling in Midgar, but to essentially turn it into a Marvel what if in a way that I think is really exciting. This is the game I'd much rather play. I don't know that I would have been all that interested in a fidelity remake of Final Fantasy VII. Like, I'm much more interested in, like,
I like think what people who want that,
again,
can just
ask
go
questions
play that.
About, sure, yeah.
It's out there and it works and it looks good. Like, there are parts of that original game that still have such a really great, distinct look that are worth, like, seeing in the way that it was then, just in higher definition. Mm-hmm. That port on PS4 is, like, really good.
It's on Switch too.
It's on. I don't know if does the Switch version also have this the thing. It must. Where like you could just give yourself infinite limit breaks. You can do a speed up thing. Like, go play.
So if you just want to go do the story of Final Fantasy VII, my guess is you could probably do it in about 20 hours if you just crank everything up.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And it got the ending of this got me excited for the rest of the games in a way that I don't think I would have been had we just gotten out of Midgar. Right,
and I'm glad they didn't. I'm glad they didn't kill her. I'm glad. Like I'm glad that they chose to like.
We don't know yet.
Like, well, that's my no. Okay, so my prediction is they're still going to kill her. They're just going to do it in a much more gut wrenching way in the third game.
Yes.
When she sacrifices herself to the planet and she transparently goes into the mist, and then you
get
all misty-eyed yourself.
This is the thing about that story is she did do that. In the original, it just doesn't, it's not clear that what she's doing is letting herself die to cast Holy, or like is casting Holy at the same. It's a whole thing. and I'm curious if they just, because like the story that if you study stories, the thing that does feel like the most sense is you hit the point in the middle of the arc that's like, I guess we can't change everything. Or some things still have costs. You know, like, just because we freed ourselves from destiny doesn't mean that bad things can't happen. Like, all of that stuff, the weight of that is going to hit. And it's going to hit either Aerith or another main character.
Yeah.
It would be sick if it hit Cloud. That would be the reading I would love. It's for fucking Cloud to die at the end of the second game.
Fucking
and for
the rest of Zack.
And then we just got Zack.
And you get Zack for the finale, and for the final game. Or you just don't get that role at all. Because, frankly, if we can talk about the combat and the mechanics for a second, I like Cloud. Cloud was like a good backbone, but he's a very distinct fighter. His counterattack stuff is cool as shit, and I like that there was that great Rufus fight because it was built around really mastering that stuff.
Same with the Sephiroth one.
Yes.
The Sephiroth and the Rufus fights felt like more of what the Star Wars game whose name I'm now blanking on
Fallen Order.
Like, I felt like I was playing more of a Star Wars game in those, like what they were going for in those sequences, which is just lining up with somebody. Like the Rufus one is so great where
it's so they fucking good.
Fucking, you hit more than three times, this asshole is gonna throw you to the side and shotgun you to the face. Yeah. And it's not a ton of damage. It's just like enough to punish you and make you start paying attention. Like those, you know, I remember messaging you, Austin, and being, you know, when I was hitting the, you know, the Shinra, enter the Shinra court part of the game, I was like, man, I like playing this game two characters and instead of three. Like, three's fine, but I always feel like you end up ignoring one person and just hoping they just do their own thing, and you focus on the two you really like. So I really enjoyed the parts of the end game that, like, split people up because it allowed you to really be focused on.
Some of the stuff with Aerith and Tifa is like, whew, like, these are tough fucking fights because I don't have that third. I don't have – those two characters never worked together previously, just the two of them, right? Mm. And so you kind of have built strategies for Cloud and Aerith, Cloud and Tifa, Cloud and Barret, you know, Aerith and Barret or whatever. But the scene with just those two together is like, all right, I have to – I don't have anyone who can just kind of tank. Tifa is a damaged machine, but, like, so cannot be your primary damage taker in that way. And so, like, when those dogs come out, it's a rough fucking fight. I love that stuff. Anyway, you were saying in general the end of that sequence.
All that stuff really ended up working for me quite a bit.
Sorry, got you had something else there too.
Oh, just that they put you in that Hojo's lab sequence. They repeatedly put you in closed quarters where you're getting staggered over and over again.
Yeah.
Right. You've really got to think about your team comp in a way that you haven't before.
Totally.
Hey, do we think he's aware of everything that's happening? That seems to be the implication, right?
Like, Hojo?
No.
Hojo.
I think he's I don't think he's aware of the timeline shit. I think he's aware of everything else because that's how he is. He's like,
yeah.
His whole thing is like he's the one who put Sephiroth into the world, right? He's the one who But I don't know that he's. Maybe he's caught on. Maybe he's like, I see there's stuff is fluctuating in a weird way.
It's just the amount of maniacal laughs they give him seem like it goes beyond just like typical mad scientist.
Here's a question. Is it fucking weird to anyone else that's like, at the time when this game came out, I was like, this is the most original shit I've ever seen. But now that we've watched Ava last year, and it's like, oh, right. This is just, Hojo is just a Gendo. That's all he is. He's just, and that had come out just before this. And it hit Japan in a big way. So it's like, oh, yeah, they're kind of just aping Ava in a couple of these big ways, which is very funny. Do you think Aerith knows? This is one of my big final bits is like, as you go into that, as the portal stuff happens, but even before that, throughout the game, there are these moments when Aerith kneels down and whispers something to Marlene and it gets like staticky and you don't know what the fuck she says. What did she say? Two, does she know more than she's letting on about what's happening in this grand, larger, like, thing? And also, I think Red 13 has definitely seems to know a little bit more than what he has said, but especially with Aerith, I'm curious if y'all trust her, if y'all believe that she's holding back something.
I think
she's 100% holding back. She knows.
Yeah, the story wants you to think, like, the way she's playing it is that, oh, at the end of this game, we're all free, and we don't know what comes next. But yeah, my guess is, I'd be with Galt that she, even if that's how she wants the party to think that she knows at least more of the. Because she says the larger threat, right? And it's like that's got to be more than just you know, if you're thinking of Final Fantasy VII and the Arc of the Store, it's like, oh, right, it's the Meteor and Sephiroth. But really, it's like part two will probably tease out a lot more about, you know, these time, like the time travel shenanigans may also be what allows them to get around the difficulty of creating a giant overworld, which they're just clearly not going to do. I expect that you'll get like a ship and be able to go around, but stuff like that is going to narratively just give them a chance to like manage the scope of the game in a way to make it. Like I expect the Golden Saucer to be like a huge fucking hub area in the sequel.
But I feel like they tease the overworld at the end of the game, right?
They tease that they're going on, they're going to continue going on that adventure. I mean, that's, again, is how Midgar ends, is they kind of all step out onto the kind of step outside mm-hmm. of Midgar and go like, all right, here we go. Aerith line, right? About how she's like misses the steel sky. And like, you're right. Yeah. That to me suggests a sort of openness, because the openness is supposed to be kind of threatening to her. But it's very easy for me to imagine. This is a very linear game. Mm-hmm. For all of the fucking complaints years ago about how Final Fantasy XIII was linear and everyone hated it, this game is like, there are obviously those hubs that you get every, you know, four chapters or whatever that are like, oh, okay, there's side stuff to go do and run around and I can explore these towns. Those are just
alleyways to run down.
Totally. But this game otherwise is very linear, and it's possible that the sequel will be similar, where what you get is, you know, you're in Calm, and then Calm is one of the towns, and you just pick up there. And then when you leave Calm, it's like a cutscene or a mini game of you moving across the map or across the world, being chased. Then you end up in the Golden Saucer. You end up in Nibelheim.
That's what I expect. I do not think you're going to get pulled out to.
I don't think I'm going to be able to. I don't think I'm going to be able to. Or it'll be a thing where you get to choose a destination on literally a map and then travel there. But I don't know that you're going to get like the big open plains.
I think you will. I think they're going to do it. And because there's like a structure to what I'll call like classic Final Fantasy, like 7 and before.
Maybe just
7 and 6, where you begin in a linear mode. It opens out into a big open world. At some point, the bad guy wins and changes the nature of that open world.
Right.
And then you exist in that.
Which, by the way, I don't know if anyone... Has anyone talked to you about this, Patrick? You've told you've gotten to the final boss of Final Fantasy 6 story before on this podcast.
Yep.
You didn't get to the final boss, we don't think. You got
in
to
six?
Yeah.
No, I got to the final area, and I never proceeded.
Do you know the twist at the end of Final Fantasy VI?
I've since read how six wraps up.
Okay, yeah. There's a whole other act of that game after the big what seems to be the final fight. Anyway, you should go play Final Fantasy VI. This is the thing you should do while you have a ton of free time right now, right? You're just not doing anything. You're just kind of lounging.
That's true. Yeah, you nailed it. I hide under a blanket until my daughter finds me, and then she goes, "Let's play." And I go, "I love playing."
And you should say, "You're right. Let's play Final Fantasy VI.
One of the greatest stories ever told."
Right. Exactly.
You get to suplex a fucking train in this game. Let's go.
Let me tell you about ninja magic.
Ghost train.
Anyway.
They had a bit of ghost train in this one too. So a little bit of Final Fantasy VI.
They did a big open world with 15. It had mixed results. It's not like that. You're right. They could do it again. But my suspicion is if they want to turn this thing around quickly, and maybe they don't. Maybe Final Fantasy VII Rebirth or Reunion or whatever the next one is seven years away or something. But my guess is it's 2 years away.
Yeah,
and to do that, they have to be really restrained and. You know, subdued in terms of what the structure is. We'll see. I don't know.
It'd be nice if there were slightly. I don't think you have to go all open world to meet what Galt wants and what I expect them to do halfway. Like, just if there were just like a little more space to play in and run around. Mm. Really, honestly, one of the things that bothered me about this one was I liked the combat, and there were times where I just wanted to just go like grind some materia, and like this game doesn't provide you with easy opportunities to just go fuck around and like I'm gonna mess with like a different, like there are very few scenarios where it's like you have all the characters and like do you want to just like do a different, like just go screw around with like what it's like to play with two characters or one like I just wish there were more opportunities to engage.
All that stuff's post-game, right?
Yeah, and it's like now post game, like I'm good, like I'm gonna go play Gears Tactics tomorrow. Yeah. Like I don't have an interest in like spending a lot more time in that world. And I wish I'd been given more latitude outside of like a battle simulator. But even the battle simulator sequence you get within Shinra, you're stuck with the party that you have until you do post game stuff. So yeah, I would like there to be more opportunities for that in the sequel, because I really, really liked the combat. I want the next Kingdom Hearts to just steal it.
Oh, it's so
take
good.
The ATB, take Please. The ATB stuff. Like, that would be fine too. I think it works exceptionally well. It feels like when I watch people play Kingdom Hearts, when I play Final Fantasy VII, like, I want to be doing what I see people doing in Kingdom Hearts, like high level play. And Final Fantasy VII makes me feel like I'm doing it, while also matching. It matches the flashy nature with like the cerebral stuff that I enjoy of what Final Fantasy VII Remake's combat was, because I really enjoyed that part of it.
I'm curious, real quick, what everyone's favorite fight was. Now that we're talking about the combat system.
I also want to know least favorite fight.
It's funny. The Hell House fight, which I know is a controversial flashpoint for a lot of people.
I
had my problems with it in the moment and have grown to appreciate it more in retrospect. I think my issues with it are communication of like what's going on, and there are things that feel obtuse in ways that I think there could have been more visual language to explain to the player, hey, there are actually more things you can be doing to just straight up prevent the house from doing the stuff that's fucking you up. Like, there's a particular fight towards the end where you're fighting like some big tanker, and I think it's with Cloud and Barret and Aerith, and it's on like an elemental like switch, so it's like you like can hit it with lightning to weaken it. So that you can hit, and when you do that, you can then hit the wheels individually to start like crushing different parts of the body. And then when it switches to a new elemental, and you got to figure out which one it's weak to. So like, I loved all of those fights that forced you to actually engage with different materia systems and like looking at the visual language of the enemy and having all that work in concert with one another. Hell House is the only fight I had any meaningful trouble with. I think I maybe died once or twice after that. Maybe part of that is because I just really like character action games, and so there was just a baseline familiarity that allowed me to like kind of cruise through the rest of the game. But the ones that I found the most enjoyable was when I wanted to go into a fight, realize, oh, I'm so poorly equipped, like I can't have fire on everyone. Let me go out and do something else. And there just weren't enough times that I found for me that I was forced to do that. I was often able to just like find my way through it. And I wish there were a couple more times that it kind of punted me out. Maybe that would have happened on hard. And I mentioned to Austin when I was playing, I kind of wish I could just play on hard right now, but you can't do it till you beat the game. And now that I've beaten the game, like, I'm just not that interested in rotating through it. But what are the other fights that people liked?
I'll say one I didn't love, and this is not like because it was too hard. This is, I didn't love the Reno and Rude fight at the plate, because it just wasn't very flavorful. It felt like just relitigating those fights I'd already had, and having both of them on at the same time didn't really change the dynamic up for me. I was able to just kind of whittle one down quickly and then switch and fight the other one. And that is like not what I want from it. I'd say in terms of, I already said Rufus is probably my favorite one, but if I have to have a second favorite one in terms of just like game flow and hitting like the game coming into gear, it was probably the Airbuster fight at the end of the second reactor, which is the first time the game pushed me and was like, okay, yeah. Whoa, okay, I see. And that was really fun. So that's definitely the one that, and also the gimmick of like you're building your own boss in a sense in that fight was really cool.
Yeah.
And the stagger system is great. I love the stagger system. It's just a really satisfying when you fuck something up.
Yeah.
I hated any time I had to fight ghosts. I hated fighting ghosts, but I did love the boss at the end of that sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And that was
the most Dark Souls boss in the entire game.
Chariot one or the chariot
yes. One, not the awful ghost before that. Yeah.
the rejected Bloodborne DLC boss.
Right.
Chariot.
The chariot.
Was really one of the first bosses that taught me that it really drove home for me like how much placement within the map matter and like your distance to the mob matters. I enjoyed that. Like breaking off his wheels. Very Dark Souls-y boss. Right.
I'll say really quick regarding Elagor. One of my favorite things about this game is that basically everything from the original game is in this game in terms of enemy design and stuff. So like the original Elagor just looks like this. I just linked a picture, and like they went from that to this incredible Bloodborne.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Look up, Patrick, if you get a chance, you should just look up all the Final Fantasy VII like enemies, because everything, that big weird sword peed thing that flies around, is in that game originally. Those dudes who teleport from like one spot on the ground to another one is in the game originally, and they look way different because you're working on like a very low poly character design. But yeah, Kato, do you want to give us your answer real quick?
I was just gonna say I actually kind of enjoyed the ghosts because of the trick you can do with healing stuff, which is a silly thing to like enjoy, but it's.
Wait, if you cast cure on them, then it hurts them?
You can cast cure and hurts. You can cast, you can use potions. Revive. Like, you can just use items.
Potions. Potions are like grenades. Yeah, it's great.
Right. It's fucking, it's great because they're like disappearing or like putting on those weird, they had like a barrier sometimes, and it's just like, fuck you, potion, which was, I thought, pretty funny. And like the only time I had to go outside of my abilities to like deal with something. I think, oh God, I lost it. I had it. We can come back to me.
All right. Sounds good.
Sorry. That's, yeah. If you remember,
Gaul, I know you have to get out of here, but do you have any final thoughts before you bounce?
Yes. And I'll leave you with a talking point. I thought this remake was incredible. I thought the ending was absolutely amazing and exactly what a franchise like this needs to get going and to keep the people who made it originally, you know, interested, and to keep old heads that are open to change like us interested again and talking. And I don't think we would be talking about it in the way that we're talking about it and going to be talking about it for the next several years until the next one comes out if they hadn't done the weird time-shifting alternate universe stuff that they had. And on that note, I want to bring up the dog on the food packaging.
Oh, sure.
At the very end. Dog.
Yeah.
And how it's different.
It's different.
Different dog.
But
hashtag not my stamp.
Hashtag not my stamp. But I've got to go. Thank you all for having me on the pod. Always an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for joining us, as always.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, the dog is different. The dog is different. I don't know where's that. I don't know if that's a different world. I don't know if that's because.
Wait, what? Can you explain? Can we back up here?
It is so fucking funny to me that this is like. I'm gonna send you a screenshot. Give me a second. Let me pull it up for you. So you get to the end of that game. You get towards the end of the game, and the first Zack scene plays, and it's Zack, who is the soldier with black hair, traveling through the desert with Cloud, right? Kato, you know nothing about this character, right?
Nope. I was like, who's this motherfucker? Who's this black-haired Cloud-looking motherfucker?
Is this just Cloud? Does Cloud actually just have black hair? What happened? Did he dye his hair? Or did he go Super Saiyan?
He looked cooler. This looks like a cooler
version
of Cloud.
This guy looks cool as shit. To be fair,
I don't want
to
get a beer with Cloud. I want to get a beer with Zack.
You know who else does? Cloud. And that's why Cloud looks like that. So then you do all the fight stuff and you fight the whispers, which, by the way, did y'all catch the descriptions of the whispers, the final three whisper things, like, and how they are probably Cloud, Tifa, and Barret?
Yeah, they're like future ink, like
an entity
from the future, enchanted now. Or
yeah, it's an
like
entity
that.
From the future timeline that has manifested in the present day. It fights barehanded to protect the future that gave shape to it. And it's like a very like, oh, is that Tifa? That's probably Tifa.
That's Tifa.
also, the little glimpse you get of Red 13. That's the epilogue, right?
That is just
from
right. So like
FF7.
We're gonna talk about the end of Final Fantasy VII for a second. Regarding that. Kato, what's up?
What's up with that meteor? What happens?
So the meteor hits.
We don't need to get into that part. Okay. Yeah, the meteor.
But like that's what that. Well, clip I guess is. Those clips are the meteor hitting, Aerith dying, Red, and at the end of Final Fantasy VII, running through the wilderness with like younglings, basically.
Yeah, that was a small one.
The next generation. Yeah, the next generation of his people.
FF7 ends with like the world being destroyed. But
it's
then
not clear,
cuts to,
right? That's the thing about
it's not clear. It's
Advent Children. The thing about like that whole them,
that's
like,
true.
They're like,
that's
oh, true. We want
to. Well, fuck Advent Children.
That's my point. My point is fuck Advent Children. My point is the game ends with vagueness. You don't know if you won or not at the end of Final Fantasy VII. You don't know.
You just know that life goes on.
Right, life goes on. You don't know if you're alive. You don't know if any humans are left anywhere. And that's this really like fascinating thing. And then like they're like, well, wait, let's turn it into a franchise. Let's do the MCU before the MCU. and so that is like that stuff. But beyond that, there's the stuff with Zack. And so the two things that you end up seeing with Zack are you see that he like you know, fights against a bunch of soldiers, or not soldiers, Shinra, like guards, because I don't want to say the word soldier here. But you also see a bag of chips fly past him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it has Stamp on it. And you might remember Stamp is the dog from earlier in the game when you're in the sewers or like the tunnels.
When you're on the train tracks and then you move to like some hanging areas.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like follow his nose and he'll take you where to go or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just had it and I oh here it is here it is here it is. At the end of the game, when that bag flies past you, thank you to IGN for having this exact clip for me. You get this. You get the shot on the right, and it is a different Stamp. There's a bag of chips, which is where Stamp comes from. But instead of being the beagle with a helmet, it's like a a terrier with a hat.
Sure.
And it's like, well, okay, wait, is this a different Stamp? If this is a different Stamp, does that mean that you didn't save Zack in this world, but you saved Zack in a different world? Because originally what happens is Zack gets murked. Zack and Cloud are coming to town. Zack gets just killed. Cloud lives, makes it to Midgar, becomes a mercenary, meets
Which
Aerith.
Is part of Crisis Core, right? Like Crisis Core is a prequel to...
Crisis Core is like Zack's whole... is where Zack and Cloud meet for the first time.
Good game. Like, I find myself...
I'm mad I never
Core,
played it. I hear it's good.
It was a great combat system.
That's what I've heard. And it's all about the soldiers. Like, it's all about that. It's all about the crew that Zack is from and that, like, Cloud worked with in a capacity. Even in Final Fantasy VII, this thing happens, right? There is a – you can learn about how Cloud and Zack came to Midgar. And I don't have to get into the specifics because this will probably be the focus of the next game. And if you're someone who's listening to this, I'd like to hold some of the, like, interpersonal mystery back because that, to me, is, like, the heart of the game more than the meta plot that we're talking about. That is a huge change. The idea that Zack lives, the fact that Zack dies is the cornerstone of like, is one of the core catalysts for both Cloud and Aerith, who refers to Zack throughout this game. Did you catch that part, Kato? Because they hinted this the whole way through the game that Aerith had an ex-boyfriend.
Right.
That is Zack.
Oh, okay.
Which is
yes.
why she's like, you remind me of someone. All the time.
That makes sense. Wait,
it's why there's that moment when she says the name and it like gets again staticked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And there are other reasons for that I'm not going to talk about.
Question.
Yes. Unless you ask a question, in which case I'm going to answer it.
This is related to that scene at the end though, where you see Zack and Cloud.
Yes.
Are there two Clouds now?
Good. Well, so this is the question: is like.
Did they leave a world and enter a new one?
That is my read. My read is right? My gut is that they left a world behind and made it such that Zach and Zach lived in that world. And so they've like created there are three timelines.
And is the end of all of this, of like part three or however far along they go, is going to be like glimpses into all the different timelines and then some sort of reconciling of like, you know what, they're true. They're all true. You know,
you get a Han Solo. Get a party.
It happened. It's true. All of it. All of it like the FF7 you experienced in you know in the 90s is just as true as the FF7 you experienced in the 2000s.
There's always a cloud. There's like always a Buster Sword.
Right. Right. Exactly. Right. Totally. Well, like, is there a world in which what we learn in the next game is that this isn't the Aerith of our world? The Aerith of this world was killed, and this Aerith is. From a different universe, and that's why she knows about the weirdness.
Do
in the
all
timelines.
Aeriths communicate with other Aeriths?
At a certain point, they can.
Is it an Aerith?
I brought this up on the Abnormal Mapping podcast, but a thing that struck me this game that hit me was so Cloud's name is Cloud. Is Aerith just Earth? Is that the bit? Is it supposed to be Earth, and then it's like a play on Earth, like Earth and clouds? Anyway.
Damn it.
Anyway, maybe it's nothing. Maybe I'm just making it up.
Robbie,
what's
like the direct translation in Japanese?
I don't fucking know. It's Erisu, which is why it got translated as Eris back in the
Eris,
day.
Yeah.
Instead of Aerith. But then they officially decided it's Erisu Gainsborough, which is a great name. Aerith Gainsborough. All-time good. All these characters have great fucking names.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to just look at some questions real quick because we've been putting them off, and I know your time is limited, Patrick, so...
No one is... They went for a walk. They're still in that walk. Hell I come back from that walk is...
Probably
my door will get knocked.
Yes, exactly. Sylvan writes in and says, what do y'all think the valuable additions were when it came to the side stories? I felt like they often seemed like distractions from the emotional beats that came before or after them in the original. Do you think it's even possible to add in new content to a pre-existing story like this and not have it be a distraction? What the fuck was up with that Cat She scene? Hold on to that anger, Sylvan.
Wait, the what scene?
Uh-huh. Do you remember when the plate dropped and then you got a cutaway to a weird... Cat?
The cat with the crown. Who's that? I want to meet that person.
Yeah. Kate Sith, as I call them.
So that's what we all called him. We all said Kate Sith.
You put an I in there, and look, yep. I'm going to say Kate Sith.
You're certainly not going to say Cat She.
No.
Cat She? That's how you say...
What? I want to say that it is...
I believe we went over this,
Celtic?
I think, like when
it's
this game
Celtic.
Was...
Celtic. Yes, it's Celtic.
And this game was unveiled, and I was like, come on. Mm-hmm. Kate Sith, Mako,
very
Mako.
Very cat.
Mm-hmm. Don't look up Catchy.
Such a cool character.
You should not look up Catchy.
I'm not. I'm stopped.
Because there's like good, interesting twist stuff there.
but cool, I saw the cat with the crown and I was like, who the fuck is this? Why are they mad? And why aren't they my friend?
2022 Vincent is going to be a whole nother energy, Patrick.
My God. He is going to be so hot.
He's going to be so hot. People are going to lose their shit.
You are going to want to fuck Vincent so hard. I am sure of it.
Absolutely. Anyway, the question is basically, hey, do you think adding the side content like added anything? Is there anything that comes across that you liked from those side stories?
No.
I like the
broadly,
Angel of the Slum stuff. I like that stuff. That's fine.
Yes.
I like.
I say broadly, with like some rare exceptions.
I like the kids. I like hanging out with those guys. I like the kids who all get the fake Buster Swords. That's cute.
Do they mean literally like side missions? Or when you were reading that question out, I understood that as like the Jesse section.
Oh, then absolutely. I think the Jesse section slaps. I think that the stuff with that biker rules. I think
yeah.
it's not like it is transformative. I mean, I think the Jesse stuff is actually pretty important in terms of changing the structure of this game and giving you a reason to care about those characters and another perspective on Shinra and what it means to live on top of the plate instead of below it. Right. Important. What were you going to say, Patrick? Sorry.
I feel like their question specifically meant the side quest, but I think the question they add at the end can be interpreted to be what Kato meant, to be more broader about like what does it mean to add stuff to an existing world. I do think that like the Angel of the Slums is probably the strongest of the side quests, but I will say broadly I was disappointed. I think they could have done a lot more with that stuff. It did feel a lot more like busy work in which I kept doing them thinking there'll be a little bit more here and often there wasn't. Thankfully, the combat is so strong that it often didn't. I was like, just happy to go do another thing and maybe fight some boss. Like, yeah, that was enough for me. But I do think it was a missed opportunity. And like, this is what I meant by like the lack of voice memos or like diary stuff.
I don't like walking through town and having everyone just yammer constantly. Yes. I would rather almost all, I don't know if I would rather have to sit and talk to each person, because if I did that and it was the same dialogue, I'd be like, this isn't worth my time, I'm going to ignore this. But I don't.
Couldn't they have done both though, right? Probably. Like, couldn't you have had that MMO scroll, but then have certain characters that you could go have a conversation with?
Yeah, yeah. It just doesn't work for me.
Did y'all ever get that thing where they load in all at once after like a beat, and then you have a million people talking all at the same time?
Avalanche. Yeah, 100%. But I do. Okay, so here's an example of stuff that I think works for me in the broader sense of new stuff. Is another thing that we haven't talked about is the Wutai stuff, which in the original is maybe you hear the word Wutai once or twice early on, but here they hammer that shit hard. The association they're trying to build between Avalanche and Wutai is very high. And trying to basically, that's also all new. The idea that like in this part of the game, that there's another Avalanche out there that you are a breakaway sect from is all new, and all that stuff works for me.
Is it?
100%. Yes, 100%.
I could have sworn.
Yeah, remember when you go?
I could have sworn that in the original you still were a cell of Avalanche. You just never really saw.
But the idea that Barrett's cell has broken away is completely.
And that you're extremists. Like you're considered to be radicals within an existing
radical
organization.
This is even distinct from the side material of Final Fantasy VII, in which it was the opposite, in which the radical cell was the cell, the more violent cell was the other Avalanche, and you were the cell who was like not trying to blow up the world. Because there was the other cell was the cell that was like, we're going to fucking destroy everything and start fresh. And you were like, no, I think we could just blow up these reactors. Yeah. Avalanche was like that. And that's in like side novels and side stories and stuff that came out well after Final Fantasy VII. But in the original, your Avalanche is not like a more radical, more revolutionary side group. And the original Avalanche doesn't show up twice in Midgar to save the day, which is really interesting. And
I wish there was a little more of that. I liked the wrinkle of because they established Barrett as being like singularly focused on saving the planet at all costs, and that the collateral damage is worth it for the eventual goal of saving the planet. And they certainly like hone in on that here, and like putting that in the larger structure of, well, actually there are, it's not just Tifa who thinks that maybe Barrett is too singularly focused, but actually like within the organization, he is also seen as an outlier. I wish there had been more voice given to that side. Like, I wish there had been some sort of sequence that wasn't just other parts of Avalanche coming to either save the day or that intersects with Barrett's cell. But that you actually spent time with that group, because like the dynamic of Tifa and Barrett is one of my favorite parts of the expanded like dialogue in this is giving rise to these competing viewpoints, even if they have overlapping objectives. And I would have liked to have seen a little bit more time spent with like the ideological splits within Avalanche. Like, I expect that stuff to go away now that we're.
Oh, I see. I think it's going. I think they're going to develop it further because of how hard they've been.
I hope that's true. I'd like to be wrong. Yeah. I worry. I wonder how much that stuff gets lost in pursuit of the meteor and Sephiroth and the winds of fate.
Yeah.
I would hate if, like, part of what I think what makes this like this game work, and part of what like constrains, like brings out the best parts of Nomura, is like the constraints of it in a remake, in which like you're working within an established play box. And I guess I'm just curious how much they go outside, how much they choose to go outside of that. Because they don't want to deal with that. But then again, they double down on the radicalism of FF7 in a way here that I thought they would sanitize.
Me too.
And I think our initial fears of the demo were, I understood those concerns, but I think Kato and I were both on the side of like, well, maybe I don't think it's as sanded as it could be. And maybe people still have legitimate criticisms of the politics of Avalanche or Barrett, but I don't think you can credibly make the argument
the context ends up being that is a specific Jesse worry, right? Right, like mm-hmm. they let Barrett be
right.
The revolutionary.
If the demo had gone If the demo had gone 5 minutes later and you would have gotten Barrett right. being like, listen, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
This is real shit. Uh-huh. You would have had, there would have been the space for it, right?
Right.
I think the response immediately would have been like, okay. What they're doing is giving foils for Barrett to be able to restate the thesis, which is great. I'll say real quick, the reason that I do think that they're going to keep on the Avalanche big picture stuff is not only that they tease that stuff, but the degree to which they've reframed the Wutai stuff. And the original Wutai was the nation that had already basically acquiesced to Shinra and had been the last big holdout nation state that said, hey, don't come build reactors here. And they'd been beaten. The reactors were in place. It was done. Here, there's this whole, like, 9/11 Bush, like 9/11 was an inside job vibe of them trying to drum up a reason to redeclare war against Wutai. They're trying again to like position Wutai as an aggressor so that they can go to war. Shinra can go to war with Wutai with popular support. And that seems like it's going to be it seems like that's going to be in the sequel because of how much they're hammering it
right.
here in a way that it didn't in the original. They could have easily left it out. But the idea that they're like Avalanche is tied to Wutai over and over and over again, it feels like they're prepping for a big Wutai thing, and Avalanche feels like it'll get caught up in that. My question is, like, is Avalanche just connected to Wutai? But Black Dynamite, I sell drugs in the community. Like, is Avalanche just an extension of Wutai? Is Big Avalanche really just that? Right. We'll see.
Because they do mention don't they mention at some point that Avalanche is, that the Big Avalanche is basically a PMC at this point? Like, they're just kind of out for hire. Yeah, very early on. They're like, the original Avalanche is just kind of like, you know, they look for jobs and stuff, but like they've lost their radical, like very, yeah, when you meet them at the, or when you first see them at the, what's it called? When you're fighting the motorcycle guy.
When you're picking up the, right, yes. Yeah. That's good. Mello writes in, Mello of Waypoint Moderation Team and also of making cool beats and music and albums. Mello writes in and says, a mechanical question, assuming follow-ups to this game are happening. Do you think the developers are planning to allow players to have a continuous playthrough of every title in the Final Fantasy VII Remake series with rollover of things you gained in the previous titles?
I've thought about this a lot.
I would personally like to start back up with everything I had and play the second game at, like, an effective disc 2, but I can't see the subsequent games being released without an option to start in the middle of the story. Would a solution for this be to give returning players bonuses at different tiers depending on how deeply they played? Will the direction of the next game be so different that a fresh start is justified? And all of this is irrelevant. What would you prefer they do?
They have already given themselves an out, which is like, yo, you went through a portal.
That's what I was literally going to say. Like, you're in a different world.
Back to power level 0.
Yeah.
I would love some sort of reward for, like, a save game reward. Like, give, you know, some sort of connective tissue, I guess, in the way that there's a disc 1 and disc 2. But just the nature of the fact that optimistically this comes out in 2 years. Like, realistically, it comes out in 3 years. It's just hard to imagine that, like, cool, you can just have Thundaga, like, right at the beginning. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't know how mechanically they handle that, given...
What if it...
It's not going to be a game that requires you to have played the first. They're going to let new players just jump into the second one.
What if there's, like, a baseline new player one that is leveled up more than, like, a level 0 Final Fantasy VII character? But if you played, you're going to be better off because you've, you know, gathered more stuff and got your, like, builds all set up and stuff like that, right? Like, there could be, like, a baseline, like, here's the level 30 character. My Cloud is level 35, though, because I did all the side quests. So that's the, like, extra you get to carry over.
Right.
Or something. I don't know. Like, that's the one way I could see them doing a transfer situation is, like, have a baseline that is a leveled up character of some sort, and, like, all the materia are, like, level 2 maybe, you know, or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. My question is, like, about the sequel is, part of this, and I think it connects to this, is, like, who do you recruit in the next game? Who do you get to play as in the next game? Because each of those characters will have to be as developed as these four are in terms of having their own unique sub-abilities, having their own special abilities.
Well, presuming it's not just a Red situation, right? In which...
If they have to...
I'm not saying they'll do that, but I don't know that I would presume...
I wish I could have played as Red.
Every character that was And I bet you will be able to, but I don't know that I would presume that every character will meet it. Like, I think there will be red situations in
yes,
the sequel
I think that's
in which
true.
There are characters who are introduced. Like, it just it wouldn't have made that much sense to like for them to spend the time to make
no,
Red
totally,
playable.
Totally.
Like, yeah. It made sense for like how they handled it, but it will make sense that Red is playable in the sequel. I guess the question I have is, are like, they were very specific in this game of keeping you in tiny parties. You never had a situation where, hey, you have four characters, you're just not gonna have one of them fighting, because the game tried to tie in the narrative components with the characters who were present. Yeah. And I liked that part of it. Like, it allowed them to do things like split up characters into groups of two, which RPGs have done plenty of times in the past. You know, the Final Fantasy VI, which I never finished. Yes. The end of that game is going to this, you know, floating area where you split into groups. Like, that happens all the time, but it's arbitrary, right? And I liked, actually, in this game that they made conscious narrative choices based around the party splits. It honestly forced you to do something like, Aerith and Tifa. I don't know that I would have paired those two together mechanically, and I like the fact that the game put me outside of my comfort zone and had me doing that. So I'll be curious how. But then you think about like a Vincent and like how, or like a Yuffie who would be like a super fast, agile. Like there are characters who are going to be really fun mechanically based on what the foundation. I just am so curious how broad they're going to go, or if the linearity will probably let them.
Yeah, that's what my suspicion is. Yeah, I think we'll probably end up still getting really linear stuff that lets you do those specific things. What were you going to say, Kato?
Well, two things. First was, is the Hojo Labs, his lab section, the first time anyone else specced out everyone's materia instead of swapping back and forth every time someone left
the
party? I
still swapped most of the time. I
couldn't do it.
A few key things back and forth.
It's like, I swapped back.
I needed someone to have my best cure. Like, I couldn't not have someone have my best cure spell.
Swapped back twice, I was like, okay, hold on, let's sit down and figure out what how we can spread this out, because I'm not gonna do this.
I did do
every
that,
single
but then
time.
I still was like, you know what, I'm gonna carry this cura with me the whole way. I'm gonna just have a loose slot on each side as quickly.
It's why I wish they had had like I have the UI elements of this game are not good. So I actually early on, after Waypoint contributor Julie Muncy mentioned that it's how much of a pain it is to upgrade individual weapons, they had reviewed the game, I think, for Wired, and had recommended, look, if you want to just set it to like balanced or attack or defense, like, you'll be fine. Ooh. Like, you're not going to lose anything meaningfully.
Wait, there's auto update for the weapons?
Yeah.
I don't even remember 100%. This. Wow.
And I embraced it immediately. I just decided, okay, Barrett is defensive and he's long range. Just slot every weapon he gets, defense. I was like, Aerith, same way. You're going to be healing. You're going to be buffing, defense. Like, Tifa, your offense. Like, Cloud, your offense. I just let all that stuff get slotted all on its own, and I found no meaningful difference in my...
I wonder if they made better choices than I would make. And my guess is probably yes.
I wonder.
The automatic thing is making decisions based on what's available, but probably based on also what the whole grid will be eventually. And there's a lot of when you go in and try to do that yourself, it's like, I don't fucking know what the next opening, like the next few slots are going to be that open up, the next like few bonuses. But I guess I want more attack power, I guess. Yeah. The answer seemed to be yes. Like, I wasn't having a hard time with the game, but I am curious if it's like you get a better build.
Maybe that contributed to the fact that I had an easier
That's
time.
That's what I'm thinking.
Like, look, I want Cloud to just be able to – I'm going to cast a barrier on him, and he's just going to go in there and just wreck shit.
And there's like,
and same with Tifa.
There's that impulse sometimes to not min-max, to be like, all right, well, I want to make sure I get a little extra HP or defense. I don't want to just put it all into attack. And I wonder if like
– and that's what the materia is for, right? That's exactly. That's how I would balance that stuff out, was like – if someone was attack heavy and had some lower HP.
What is everyone's favorite materia? If you have to pick one materia – Not like you could only have one, because that means that like elemental wouldn't exist or like wouldn't be useful. But like, if you were like, I have to bring this one thing with me into the next game, what would it be?
Magnify Cura.
Yeah, I guess, you know, that's a tough thing to answer, because I found this is true of so many RPGs in which the like the tree of poison, time, you know, like slow,
haste.
Things like that are, haste I think is like, if you're not, this. If you're not using haste, then like you're making like just life harder for yourself. But the things like poison and like other things that can like exploit elemental weaknesses, I just never found, the game didn't demand it of me.
Right.
And so I've heard that on hard, you really need to lean into that stuff. Like something like the Hell House battle using like poison is like extremely useful.
A lot of stuff is not
damage.
Immune to poison that you would think it would be immune to poison. And that gives you just constant damage. Like you said,
right.
Yeah, just like an ongoing dot is great.
Well, and part of it is I wish the game, so there were times towards the last third that I was just never having to change my loadout. And so I was like, I'm just going to start, you know, I get a new materia slot, or I've got a new weapon that has something where it's like, oh, this is different than my normal loadout. I'm going to put in time. And I was like, wow, actually, like, slow is super fucking useful. Like, even if they're resistant to it, like, you can get just a lot more hits in if you put that in. And I wish the game, I understand why. Look, I love the fact that it recognizes that you might come into a battle and want to switch up. And it's like, cool, just quit out and you can just start right before that fight. We're going to recognize that. Even fights with multi-phases, like you can just start mid-phase. You don't have to start all the way over. That is all really, really smart. And I wish more games were cognizant of that. That said, I often muddled my way through fights where it would have been more fun to have a better equipment loadout. And I wish I could just do it mid-fight. Like, give me a consequence. Make it an ability. Like, let me just swap one, right? Like, if I find out, like, I went in with fire and actually I need lightning, like, yeah, make me have two ATB and then I can swap out my fire for a lightning. I would have liked something like that,
right?
Because what I did often was just, you know what? I bet I can just get through this fight a little bit longer and not do it, and I just don't have the weakness. The game clearly wants you to be playing around with those weaknesses and staggering, and I would have enjoyed it more if the game gave me some opportunity to do that mid-fight.
Even if it was only definitely, like, once a fight, or if it made me cost me
just
an
once,
ATB.
So you can swap one materia.
Yeah.
And
totally.
Something like that.
The first run, assess, then probably die because it didn't have the right thing equipped became kind of...
Oh. Assess right, see, like, is the that's right a answer, by the way. Assess is the materia you want to bring on.
Yeah,
forward.
Actually.
That's the one I never unslotted.
But also, that's what I think, like, this whole little conversation speaks to, like, a weak point in sort of, like, the cycle you go through in each fight is, like, how often did I started bringing, you know, I had Cloud with assess, like, for, like, half the game. And then when it was clear that I don't need to assess unless I get my ass kicked, it's like I just stopped equipping it. But then it's like, cool, now I have to quit out, equip assess, go in, see if I guess what the weaknesses are.
That looks
and then,
like fire, you know, probably. That thing looks like burn.
And so I just think there's probably, like, given how elegant so many other of the, like, the way it handles combat, there are little things like that that I wouldn't, you know, give me consequences for it, but give me a little more leeway mid-fight.
They should just make assess a thing that everyone has next time. Assess should just become, like, there's that thing with Magic the Gathering cards, which is, like, one way to know that it's broken is that everyone runs it. The second that every deck is running a card, you know, okay, that card is fucking busted. And assess is that for me, which is like, this game is built for assess. There are fights that don't make any sense without assess. Just put assess in the game. Just let me have it, or like make it a cloud ability and make it a materia for anybody else or something like that. That could be fun. Or maybe that ends up being like Red's thing, as Red can just do assess. I don't know. But
yeah, I agree. That would be an elegant solution.
But that would just
it.
Be fine. And that way it's just like, at least I have it all the time. It doesn't stop your thing of like, do you still need to spend something to change your materia slots around?
Or
you can't do that, but...
I do think there's an interesting tension there between picking something for element for a weapon and being like, I'm locked in here. If it's the wrong one, I'm kind of fucked. But then having the slots on, like, your magic users to have all of them. So, like, even if maybe Cloud is not doing as much damage, you still have the weakness on someone else. That sort of trade-off, I feel like, might be too mitigated by switching mid-battle, but I think I don't know. What if they added some...
There's no consequence right now, right? Like, if you go into the fight, I think you're right. The tension is supposed to be the thing you just got out, which is like,
right.
You're climbing the tower. And as you're climbing the tower, you realize, oh shit, I didn't bring my electricity shit. And so all these turrets are going to fuck me up. I got to fucking get, thunder in here real quick. And you can't do it because you're in the middle of a fight. But okay, I die. I choose to just die really quick and then put it in because that is what the game lets me do. And at that point, it's not costing – all it's costing is time. And at a certain point, I stop even letting it cost me time because I realize very quickly I don't have the right kit for this. Let me just die. And at the point that that's the case, it's like, well, then I may as well just – you may as well just let me do it,
No, it was more like saying that it forces your magic users to be your all-rounders. Like you can't spec. You have to use the four of their slots to have one of each. I didn't want to run into this thing. So I would assess and then like figure out. Okay, we'll work around this. I used element less because of that in some sections. Just like being like, all right, I'm not sure. I don't want to hit at reduced strength with cloud. So I'm just not going to use. Elemental.
It always felt to me that was like, I'm in the sewers, there's not going to be robots down here. So I don't need to fuck around. I'll put elemental on fire instead of putting it on lightning.
You assess the first couple of rooms and then be like, there's a pattern here and swap it in.
Yeah.
That was kind of fun. But
Mike, I ended up just always making sure I had all four elements. I never had like one person with all four elements. That felt too risky to me because then if they died, there would be a moment where I'd be like, well, fuck, I can't get the space I need to stagger this thing or whatever and res someone. So I try my best to avoid that by putting all my eggs in one basket.
I did that, and it was... Well, I did it mostly with Barrett and then would steel skin him, and he'd be able to tank out anyways, so like it was fine. But whenever it was Aerith, I got into some bad situations where Aerith would die, and then I would have none of my magic, and it was a bad scene. So, yeah, maybe something else would have worked better.
Yeah, yeah. Most of these other questions are things we've basically answered. So I feel like we've done a good job here. Patrick, you didn't get called away. I feel like we should win while we're ahead.
No, that's true. I heard them go up the stairs, and I was like, okay.
No, right? I think...
I don't want to... overplay my hand.
Exactly. Now you get to leave early. Yeah, I wrapped up. I'm good. And I'm glad you're back. Oh my God. Now you get to be the hero. You know what I mean? Now you get to, they didn't have to come get you. You went out there. As always, you can follow everything we do at Waypoint, twitter.com/waypoint, waypoint.advice.com. Patrick, where can people find you? And is there anything you want to shout out while you're on this paternity leave?
You can't find me. What?
Maybe this is too long of a question.
What's up?
Go.
Was the Sephiroth at the end real or was it Dementors?
The Dementors have nothing to do with Sephiroth in that way.
No.
I don't think.
At some point, you smash a sword through him and he splits up into a bunch of Dementors. In one of those cutscenes, he like...
At some point, I'm going to watch a three-hour
explainer. Yeah,
I haven't done
it yet. Are you sure it's that and not the Genova reveal? Because the Sephiroth that you fight, they're Sephiroth clones... And they're part of Project S. Yeah, all those people with numbers on them are part of
the reunion
project. Who see? Uh huh.
Motherfucker.
When you're like, I think this is going to be a short question. Yeah. No.
You're basically asking a question that will be answered in the sequel
Or the original. You should just go play Final Fantasy.
I'm gonna go play Final Fantasy.
Just go max stats and just fucking
just bowl through
limit breakthrough Final Fantasy VII.
It'll be fun.
Oh my God.
You'll still get stuck because there'll be mini games that are hard and you'll get stuck on those.
Oh my God, the fucking levers.
For me, it was the pull-ups. Anyway,
I did all the pull-ups.
Me too.
The last one was the only one that gave me trouble. And I was at my wife. My wife came out and she was like, "Why are you talking out loud to yourself?" I was like, "Because I was doing up, down, right, left, up, down, right, left, up, down, right, left, up, down, right, left."
Once it got fast, it got good. It got easier the faster it got for me. Once you get like to max speed, you could just do it, and that was great. Anyway,
she also my oldest, which is now a weird thing to say. Jessica,
congrats, by the way, for the first time on recording.
Thank you.
I think Maybe that's
Yeah. No, I came on briefly for a podcast to say I was taking time off. Thank you all the same. She has this maze book that she does. And I started playing Final Fantasy VII around the time when I started taking this time. And when she would finish her maze, I would go, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, because like, she just wanted like a little ditty at the end. And I was like, I've been playing it a lot. And then all of a sudden, my wife, I was playing it one morning because I'm usually the one that gets up early with the kids and let her sleep because she has to do all this mama work at night. And she like comes in while Barrett goes, and she's like, "That's what that's from." And I was wondering that weird little musical cue you were doing when you were reading that book to Jessica. I was like, "Yeah, it's from the video game." And so then I think she had to get suckered into doing it. She's like, "Do the thing that Dad does."
Oh, that's so good.
Like, I don't want to do the Final Fantasy VII.
That's so funny.
Music cue.
Love it.
Yeah, you can follow me at Patrick Klubik. I guess I'm bearing this in at the end of the podcast. I'll tweet about it. But I was only going to take a month off and come back to work, but given the state of everything, and also because if something went weird with my job, I'd lose the paternity leave.
Yep.
I'm going to take the additional 2 months, or at least another month, and then play things by ear. Even outside of losing the paternity leave, like asking my wife to watch two kids while I come down to talk about Gears Tactics when I have an alternative seems like maybe not the choice I should make. And I have the utmost confidence in the entire team here to let me go take that time and keep fighting the good fight. So for at least the next month, but I think in all likelihood the next 2 months I'll be taking that time. But because I also can't leave or go anywhere, I will probably still occasionally pop in on the podcast because it's like human contact or the closest that I don't consider my family to be human contact. They're just here. I don't have a choice with them anymore. So I'll be around every once in a while. I've not touched the Mario Maker stuff. I wanted to have a Mario Maker hot take here somewhere, but I'll have to come back with that in a week or two. So
shout out to Till Death Do Us Part also.
Yeah, but yeah, my wife and I brought back our horror podcast.
Episode one, I saw go up.
Yeah, we just called it episode one because we noticed and we're now answering emails that people have sent us from 2016 because we feel like we owe them. this person named Matt, we're curious about the relationship status because they were talking about it in relation to a horror movie from 2016. So yeah, you can go listen to that where we did an episode about quarantine movies last week, and we did one this week about Under the Skin, Jennifer's Body, and Ginger Snaps, all great movies. So you can go check us talk about horror movies there. But yeah, I guess that's the shout out I would do. And again, thanks to all y'all for making it so that I can take all that work, especially Rob. Rob does a lot of the editorial heavy lifting while I'm out and he's not here. That's been absent from this podcast. I was like, oh, I can do a podcast without Rob talking shit about me, about like the amount of yard work I'm doing. I'll just sneak into this Final Fantasy spoiler cast without Rob.
Other real quick thing, Patrick, are you watching The Last Dance?
I watched the first episode. Okay. I wasn't going to watch
two.
It on myself.
The first night, you mean?
No, just the first hour.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, I wasn't sure if my wife was going to be into it or not. I mean, she grew up in that era too, but I take like the last shift with Elizabeth, our youngest, or Ariel. Have I shared that story?
Well,
I should sneak this one in quickly. Is that when we tried to involve Jessica in the naming process.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, do you have a name you'd like to think about calling the baby? And she's like, Ariel. And I was like, oh, because of the Little Mermaid? She's like, yes. And so we wrote it on the big board. We had like 7 sheets of paper up with all the names out like big, and we were crossing them out. And then when we brought the baby home, we're like, oh, the baby's name is Elizabeth. And she goes, no, the baby's name is Ariel.
That's going to stick. You're stuck.
She has continued to do this throughout the last month, where around the house we just refer to the baby as the baby or your sister, because if she catches us saying Elizabeth, you will hear her from across the house, not Elizabeth, Ariel, and just like correcting us.
Oh, that's so funny.
We had a neighbor whose son was graduating from college, didn't get to have a ceremony, and so they did. I'm sure people have seen this, you know, going around. They did kind of, you know, a fake ceremony, you know, a ceremony with the people around them, and so they had like grandparents in the cars and the neighbors, you know, neighboring houses out to cheer and stuff like that. So we had that a couple of days ago. And one of our neighbors came by just to say hello and congratulations on Elizabeth. And I, you know, they're saying hi to Jessica and they kneel down to her and they go, oh, you're a big sister now. And she goes, yep. And they go, what's the name of your big sister? And she goes, Ariel. And I turn to her and I go, what's her real name? And Jessica looks down at the floor and just goes, Elizabeth.
So
I mean, I've told her, I was like, you can call her Ariel. I don't care. Just your mom and dad are going to call her Elizabeth. And you have to be okay with that, and she'll be begrudgingly agree to that, but isn't fully confident with it. So you know, it's Ariel or Elizabeth. Take your
pick.
Take your pick.
Yeah, love it. Kato, where can people find you on the internet?
At @a_kato_appears playing Final Fantasy VII because I need to know OG. What the fuck is happening.
I really do recommend. One of the other questions that did come in was basically like, I feel like there was a bait and switch here. My recommendation is to go play the original. It's there. It exists. It's still playable. It's still really good. I've been watching a Let's Play of it and really enjoying it. And
it's unlike the film industry, which does its best to pretend originals don't exist, or only panders to, like, you know, folks that like are film historians or like really care about where something came from. Like when a remake comes around in like other industries, there's this tendency to just like, this is the new thing. This is it. And I don't think Square has, I don't feel like they've gone out of their way to pretend the Final Fantasy VII doesn't exist. Like they just re-released that on Switch and have made it easier than ever to engage with that story.
They haven't done, they haven't Lucas'd it.
Nor does this one even pretend, that it's not canon, right? Like that's kind of the part of the genius thing of this, and how why I think it's goofy, but works to a degree that I am okay with. Of like, yeah, like it happened. Like this is just a different version of that tale, but that one still happened.
Yeah.
Granted, let's see what they do with that in parts.
We'll see. They could send the shit. I'm so much more happy with this than the alternative than a version of this that whatever. All right. Thank you as always. You can send your questions to gaming@vice.com. Shout outs to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Speaking of music, my last real shout out here is the moment the fucking Genova theme hits and like the fucking synths hit in that fight against Genova at the end. I've marked out so hard with like the oil falls from the sky and it like,
what the fuck was that?
What? What's up with the oil, you mean? Or what's up with
the
like,
fucking
Genova?
Genova. Dream thing? What?
What's up?
Mother.
Fucking what?
It's sick. Don't worry about it.
Also, can I just say really quick shout out also to the section of the lab that you do all that like those fights in. Something about the scale in that room felt the most like the things I've seen of the original than any other like location in the game. Like I just think they did the style and like the
Shout outs to the person who made the JPEGs of trying to depict Midgard during the time that you scale the environment.
I kind of love it. I'll be honest. Look,
it's like this is a game. No expense was spared except for the skyboxes.
The floor boxes.
They assigned to some poor intern.
I want to know how we got there so bad. I want to know how we got to there.
No one's gonna look down.
Isn't this view beautiful? Well, it's sure.
It's so good. All right, y'all. I hope everyone has a great remainder of your week. Patrick, thank you again for joining us. Good luck with.
Shout out to my wife, the true
MVP. Shout out to Jessica and Ariel, and everything that's going on there in the house. We'll be back later this week with a regular episode of Waypoint Radio. Look forward to that. Until then, fuck capitalism. Stay home.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
All right.
All right, y'all.
I'll talk to everyone later. Stay safe.
I meant go home, but I said stay this time. I meant go.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah, we've talked about it. We're going back and forth on it. Because a lot of people don't get to stay home. That's right. A lot of people have to fucking go to work. So I say, as an ambulance drives past my apartment. So
yeah. I think the sentiment is understood.
As long as it's there. All right.
Still didn't get that cable, huh, Austin?
I got it working the other day, and then it fell, and we had like two episodes with me on, and now I don't have a place
for
it.
It was the thing I was most curious about. I was like, all right, when I log in here, what am I going to get?
We did like three episodes with camera, and now I just don't have one again, so I'm working on it.
When it fell, and then like what, the cable
the
just
camera
like
itself
working?
Is now just not working. So
oh my
I'm
God.
Like,
Jesus,
it's
Christ.
A nightmare. I was like,
that's a twist I didn't see coming. That's I'm genuinely surprised. Okay.
It sucks. All right. Where did I put it? There it is. All right. 35.
Wow, sure. Yeah, okay.
That's guys. Far, I know. Ooh, that's how I'm feeling today. That's how. Yeah.
That's like casting Kiraga. It's like,
there's a whole long lead in.
Probably should have just cast Cure twice. It actually made more sense.
Well, you burn the ATB, though. Yeah. That's the thing, is you don't really want
to
waste.
That's why you
ATBs.
Get that refocus and you got that spare one to go. Yeah. And you put on that bangle or whatever that sends ATB use into your limit break.
Yes. Or you drop those at the ATB ward. Which
that's
is
where
so
I,
good.
That's where I spend, you know, the line to the ATB ward during the pandemic. Are wild.
God. All right, I will do an intro. What is this is not a numbered episode, right, Kato?
No, it could be.
No, let's just do a special. Okay.